The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
Look, as much as I love that we don't really see images of that film, I just want to see that film.
The terrible Australian Bea Jermaine.
If they made a romantic comedy out of The Fly, this would probably be it.
It contains coarse language.
After it was over and the credits were done, my friend just looked at me and he just said, "Dude, that was f***."
Mature themes.
Her husband wants her need satisfied and she had a zombie baby with him.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Podcasters of Horror. I am your host, Super Marcy, and with me on this 11th episode of the podcast is the one and only, the terrible Australian, Bea Jermaine. Hello, Bea, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Marcy. How are you?
Doing all right, thanks, Bead.
Well, that's good to hear. What's been going on, Marcy, since we last recorded a show together?
Well, life is just really, really, really busy, and that's about all there is to it.
Yeah, it's pretty much the exact same on my end as well, but in a good way. Like, I've been busy with work and a bunch of other stuff, and also some projects as well, both for the site and other things as well, which I can't really go into right now until they're actually officially done. But but things have been pretty good on my end, but I am definitely looking forward to doing our first Podcasters of Horror in a little while.
Yes, and we will be doing Podcasters once a month going forward because we have a schedule. The next few episodes will be the second half of season 2 for Mick Garris's Masters of Horror series from 2005 to 2007, I should say. And on today's episode, we will be discussing season 2, episode 8, Valerie on the Stairs, and episode 9, Right to Die.
Indeed, definitely two very polar opposite episodes that in some kind of ways have similar aspects to each other, but I think they have a lot in them that we definitely will have a lot to discuss.
Yes, that's for sure. So we will get right to it with Valerie on the Stairs.
Welcome to Highburger House. Sign here.
So, what are you writing?
A dark romance.
A doomed romance?
It's the best kind.
What's that, the new book?
What are you doing? I was looking at my work behind my back.
Who is it? I want to know about Valerie.
I can't have her. She belongs to the Beast.
Why?
Because we wrote her that way.
I'm going to finish your story for you.
Of course you are.
This was written and directed by Mick Garris, based on a short story of the same name by Clive Barker. This one stars Tyrone Letso. I can't say it. Claire Grant, Christopher Lloyd, and Tony Todd. And the small synopsis, which is from Wikipedia. A novelist rents a room in a flop house to write a novel and discovers there are fates worse than literary anonymity when he encounters a mysterious woman and a stalking demon spawned from the imagination of three tenants.
Indeed.
Yes. So another Mick Garris written and directed episode with a story by Clive Barker, and I have not actually read the story. I can only base this on actually having watched the episode. And it's an interesting one because it does involve like writers, and they all for some reason live in this house rent free until they actually do get published, which is a very weird kind of thing. But we see like the main character of Rob, who goes to this house, and I think we can assume that he's had a bad breakup in his life, and he gets a room because the previous tenant had committed suicide. And pretty much as soon as he comes to this house, he starts seeing this woman and his noises and sees blood and stuff. And it kind of gets a little bit crazy.
Oh yeah, it definitely does. That's for sure.
Yeah. So Bede, what were your thoughts on this episode? For me, this was the first time I had seen it, and I know that this was a rewatch for you.
Indeed. I mean, I've seen this episode a few times, but I will admit, like, when the last time I watched the show, which would have been like over 10 years ago, I have to admit, Valerie on the Stairs was always my least favorite episode of the entire series at the time. Yeah, because I think, like, even though it sort of has a really cool premise, I just felt like it was a bit of a mess overall. So I was kind of curious to see how my rewatch of it and would compare to now than it was then. Like, would I feel differently about it, or would I still feel the same? And I got to admit, I have warmed up to it on this rewatch. There's a lot more about it I do appreciate. But I feel like at the same time, though, it is a bit of a mixed bag as a film. And again, I hate to point this out, even though I think he's a really great guy and just such a beloved figure in the genre, I feel like Mick Garris's approach to this story was, like I said, a mixed bag. But I don't feel like the idea has a lot of potential, but I don't feel like he quite executed it well. But I mean, I'll talk about the things I did like about it. I think the episode has some really good atmosphere in it, and I think that the premise itself is actually a really interesting and intriguing one. And also, like, some of the cast members I thought gave really solid performances. Of course, you know, when you got Christopher Lloyd and Tony Todd in your cast, you know they're going to put in pretty solid work, and they both do that here. And also kind of the other sort of supporting characters who appear throughout are quite memorable in their own way. But at the same time, though, it does kind of stumble in terms of, like, the main star of the episode, Tyrone Litzo. Again, if I butchered his name, please forgive me.
I'm pretty sure I did, so we apologize.
Yeah, and who plays the main character of Rob Hainsley. I just found his performance really bland. And even, like, when scary and strange stuff happens, like, anytime he reacts to it, it just comes off as very stilted and wooden. Every time somebody, like, stumbles across a body, it's like, oh no, like, it's just no emotion whatsoever in his deliveries of his lines. And also, like, it does sort of stumble into jump scare territory a whole bunch of times with this episode.
Yes.
And it also does. there are aspects of the plot that don't really make a whole lot of sense. But that being said, though, like I said, it has some pretty good atmosphere. Some of the supporting cast give solid performances, and the concept behind the episode is really solid. And I like how the episode actually ends too, when Rob discovers more of what's happening and how he kind of fits into this whole story, no pun intended, that's happening within the episode. Mm. And how it ends, I thought, was actually really well done and actually kind of beautiful in a very interesting and unique way. But yeah, I just don't feel like it's quite as executed as it could have been. And I don't feel like it, Mick Garris, at least on a writing level, really sort of fully tapped into the story it could have been really a really strong episode, but I feel like the execution kind of makes it feel more of a mixed bag overall. But I'm curious to hear what you think, Marcy, because this is your first time watching the episode.
Yeah, so I had no idea what this one was about, what I would be in for, and I watched it and I didn't mind it, but I think I have very similar issues with it to you. The main actor I thought his performance just was not good at all. I couldn't really put my finger on it, but I think when you say it was very bland, it definitely was in a lot of ways. And I don't think it was necessarily just him. I think the writing of his character didn't give him a lot to work with either. There is atmosphere and it's sort of an intriguing story as well. And of course, yeah, the supporting cast are quite good. And Tony Todd as like the monster was a really interesting choice. And Christopher Lloyd is Christopher Lloyd. He's amazing. And yep. Fun fact, we have met both of those actors.
Indeed. And it's funny though, if my 21-year-old self saw what was watching this episode, and if I went back and told my 21-year-old self that, oh, you know, you're going to meet the two actors from this episode later on in life, I probably would have laughed at my 37-year-old me. But it's funny that watching this episode, it's like, oh, yeah, met both actors at conventions like years later. But that's kind of what was fun about seeing them, both Lloyd and Todd in this episode, even though they weren't the leads, they definitely kind of stood out with their performances in varying degrees.
Yeah, it kind of makes it stand out a little bit because you've got two really great actors in the film. And I guess, it is an intriguing story. There are some really good visuals. There is some atmosphere. But yeah, it is a little bit confusing. Like, I'm just sitting there going, wait, what? Oh, okay, huh? And it's kind of weird. Like, you sort of really have to focus and understand like exactly what's going on. And you could say in a way it has similarities to like In the Mouth of Madness.
Oh yeah.
Which you can't help but think that perhaps to adapt this story that John Carpenter might have been a better fit because when you look at, say, Cigarette Burns, In the Mouth of Madness, kind of like would kind of fit what this was trying to do, especially with kind of how it ends. It definitely gives you those like In the Mouth of Madness vibes. And yeah, I think someone like John Carpenter may have been better for this material. And I don't like, you know, saying Mick Garris like didn't do a good job, da da da. Like, I think he did what he could with the film. I just don't think necessarily the story was something that, I don't know, had a good kind of vibe with him. I don't know if it was, yeah. It just comes off as more like by the numbers rather than trying to be more unique and try something different. It's hard to tell, but it for me, it's a mixed bag. But in watching it, I wasn't necessarily bored or anything like that. I watched it. It felt like it went fast. I was like, oh, that's a really, really interesting, little episode for Masters.
Yeah, I think on a directing front, I think Mick Garris did a pretty solid job directing-wise of the episode. I think it's just really more on the script level where I think it kind of lets him down a bit. And I think it now sort of talking about, you know, like how we always talk about in a lot of these episodes, when we talk about the show, like specific episodes in each episode we talk about, we always talk about how, like, whether the episode in question could work as a feature film. And I think Valerie on the Stairs definitely could. And I think maybe one of the main reasons why I guess the episode does feel a bit messy is because it feels like it could have, they could have like made this like a 90-minute long film.
Yeah, it feels like there are things missing that are integral to kind of understanding what's going on a lot better. Because there's things like thrown at us and it's like, oh, wait, what? Okay, that's a thing.
Yeah, because like as the story progresses, we find out that Christopher Lloyd's character and Everett and also two other people who live in the building, names Bruce and Patricia, they together wrote this book, Valerie on the Stairs, along with the guy who killed himself earlier in the story named Terry. Like they all wrote this book that they all took turns writing, and eventually the book itself basically became had a life of itself, and just basically everything that happened to it happens in the story basically just manifested into reality with the character of Valerie and also the Beast played by Tony Todd. At first, like Rob, and I think us as an audience, and this is, I will say this is an interesting aspect of the episode, is that when we do see them for the first time, we think, oh, they're ghosts, like haunting the building. And then when Rob keeps asking people around the building, like, has anyone know about seeing any ghosts around the building? And basically no one's like, no, this, we haven't seen anything. And there's a good reason for that, because Valerie, played by Claire Grant, and the Beast aren't actually ghosts. They are basically these manifestations from the story just come alive. And and of course it has gone, now they basically have now taken over the story and want to be kind of set free. That's what they want to do. And then of course when we find, as the story progresses, we find out that that Rob was also part of the story and he was created, and then and then way the episode ends is that once he finds that out, that it sort of ends with this beautiful scene where he's like takes off his shirt and he realizes that his body's covered in papers, like from the section of the, probably the last part of the book. And then he sort of rips it all off, and then he just becomes like this sort of paper man. And it's actually a pretty beautiful kind of poignant ending. And then he just sort of pulls himself apart and the papers go flying everywhere. And I just found that such a beautiful ending. Even when I disliked the episode a long, long time ago, like the first time I watched it, I always found the ending was like the best part of it, along with Christopher Lloyd and Tony Todd's performances. And the ending still works. I think and to me, it kind of definitely like is the perfect way to end this story. But I think sort of getting there, it just does come across as rather messy. Because like you said, it feels like stuff was either taken out or condensed down, that it feels like it rushes through certain parts of the plot.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it is a good visual to end on. It does look quite good. And I think, you're supposed to take away that Rob is also part of this story and is a character written, which sort of is an interesting twist as well to like end on. But yeah, I think like overall it's a mixed bag, but it's definitely a story that could have probably been better if it was actually like a 90-minute film, because a lot more could have actually been fleshed out with this because it is like an intriguing story. And you know, when you kind of first see like Valerie and then you start seeing like the monster, it's really intriguing. One thing I did find kind of funny when I watched Valerie and the one we'll be talking about shortly, Right to Die back to back, I'm like, they really want to have some hot looking chick who just gets her clothes off several times.
Oh yeah. Lots
of there's boob action.
Valerie gets naked a lot in this episode.
Lots of boobs.
Indeed. And Claire Grant looks spectacular. But I'm just thinking, like, because I watch both episodes back to back, and I'm like, wow, like, the main female leads in both these episodes, like, go all out in the department.
I'm like, ew, okay then. And there's, like, very weird kind of sex scenes to go with it. And I'm like, that's a bit weird that these, like, episodes, like, watching them back to back, that they have that in it as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I don't know if I really have much more to add on what I thought of the film. I don't know if you had any other closing thoughts.
Well, I think that's pretty much it, really. Although I did like, I don't have the info in front of me. like the, basically the actress who plays, I guess the landlord of the building. I thought even though she's not in the episode much, I've really liked her character a lot, especially her big sort of scene with Rob as she's sort of like going over like the motel and everything like that. I thought she was a lot of fun in that role, even though it's only a small part. And I got to say, I want to live in this house. I mean, if you're a writer, you get to stay here rent free and you get to stay there until you've actually become a successful writer. Sign me up to this place. I want to live there.
I don't want to live there if, like, the stories start coming to life and then I'll die.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they get rid of that aspect, then I would definitely gladly move in.
Yeah, although with all these people in the house, I don't know if I'd get any writing done at all.
Indeed.
It'd be too distracting and I'd just be so self-conscious being around so many people.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if places like this actually exist, or is it just something that, you know, Mick Garrison, Clive Barker just made up just for the movie? I'm assuming that it is.
It probably is. Like, I can't imagine it would be like, what sort of a deal? It's like, you get to live here rent free. It's like, really? I don't think so. But anyway, what would your rating out of 5 be for this episode?
I'll give it a solid 2.5 out of 5. Like I said, there are definitely positives about it. It has some pretty good atmosphere. Some of the supporting cast are good. Of course, Christopher Lloyd and Tony Todd pretty much steal the whole movie. And it has a really cool and interesting concept at the center of it. But I feel like due to its kind of mixed bag execution and also a lead who is the definition of bland, it just is not quite as good as it could have been.
I probably would give it a 3 out of 5. I just thought it was solid, even though it was a mixed bag. But I think a lot of the things that it did well, I think it did pretty well. So, yeah, that's what I would give this movie. And we'll move right along to Right to Die.
I love you so much, Abby. We're gonna grow old together. I'm never gonna let you go. I'm never gonna let you go.
You'll need to get an attorney to contact the hospital's legal department.
I want you to answer this not as an attorney, but as my friend. Is this the right thing to do?
The thing about Abby, she would have forgiven you.
You didn't know her very well.
Abby is in a coma, Cliff. I guarantee you she's not left the hospital room.
Maybe not her body, but what about her soul?
She's gotta live!
So, Bea, do you want to run us through this episode?
Indeed. Right to Die is directed by Rob Schmidt, who directed the films Wrong Turn and The Alphabet Killer. It was written by John Esposito, who has actually written episodes for the recent Creepshow TV series. And he also, Marcy, he wrote Graveyard Shift. And the episode stars Martin Donovan, Julia Anderson, Robin Sidney, Anna Glavin, and Corbin Burnson. And the plot summary for this episode is, after walking away from an auto accident that leaves his wife in a coma and on life support, a man must decide to let his wife die. But the situation becomes more nightmarish when her vengeful spirit threatens to expose the dirty secret of his own. Now, I guess I'll go into what I thought about this episode. Back when it first aired, I actually really liked this episode a lot. I thought it was a pretty interesting sort of, I would say, dark horror comedy, because there are elements of dark humor throughout it. And I thought it was also a very topical episode as well, because this episode sort of came out a few years after the whole Terry Schiavo Right to Die case. And it's very apparent that this episode was definitely inspired by that whole event. Because I think she died probably a year before this episode was even aired. So it's not a coincidence that, you know, this is an episode that deals with a topical case like that.
Well, South Park did the same thing during the same time with in regards to Kenny.
Exactly. And with this one taking more of a supernatural twist. And I was kind of curious to see how, you know, this episode would hold up for me. And I got to say, I still enjoyed the episode, but it's not as great as I remembered it being. Like, I think the episode does well with its concept. And I think Martin Donovan was solid in the lead role. But I don't know, there's something, I feel like when it kind of goes for more sort of dark comedy and going for more of the satire, I don't think it, like, I think it does an okay job with it, but it doesn't feel, it's kind of similar to how I sort of felt about Pro-Life, where I don't feel like it kind of just went full bore into it. Instead, it kind of just sort of like did more of a surface level kind of look at these kind of issues. But I think I'm not sure. It's weird because I think it is an enjoyable episode. I had fun watching it, but I don't know. It's kind of missing something, and I guess it could have needed a bit more of an edge to it, given the story that it and also the themes it's tackling. And I feel like there are just aspects of it, or at least characters, just don't make any sense in the story. And of course, like the there's no one to sort of really root for in this episode either. I think Martin Donovan was solid in the lead, but when we kind of get more of his character, know more of his character as it progresses along, like we sort of realize how much of a major asshole his character is. So it's kind of an interesting episode. Like, it's, there are things about it I do like, and I, like I said, do enjoy the episode, but I don't know. It's kind of missing something, but I just can't seem to put my finger on it. But I have a feeling that you might be able to kind of shed light on what those aspects might be. But I'm curious, like I said, since this is the first time you've seen this episode, what did you think overall?
Look, this episode didn't really click with me. While I found it was, you know, an easy watch, it did not feel as long as it is. So, you know, there's positives. Like, visually, it's very striking. There's a lot of interesting visuals. The effects and like the blood and gore that come up in this are really well done. Like, you know, this show had a fairly decent budget for each episode, but a lot of the times actually make it look more like it had more money behind it, which I think this episode has that feel as well. And, you know, I think the direction was fine. But I think the problems with it lie more script level, and just, I guess, the dark humor just didn't really work for what the story was. And as you said, there's no one to really root for in this story. It just doesn't really work in that way. And I don't know if they, you know, it doesn't really pick a side in the right to die argument, which I think Pro-Life pretty much did the same thing in a way.
Yeah.
Where it's very like a mixed message, and I felt this was like that as well. But where it kind of fumbles is a lot in the main character. And I think, look, his performance is okay. Like, he's generally a solid actor, but we sort of don't get the full picture of his character until it, you know, the story progresses a bit more. And I don't know, I just didn't feel like there was anything genuine about anything this character did, whether it was a good or bad thing. It's just how I think it was likely written. And like Corbin Bernstein's character was just like the most stereotypical asshole lawyer. And I think he hams it up a little bit, but he was still, you know, fairly watchable. But I don't know if that quite worked for this, especially when he's being such an asshole to the guy's wife while she's in hospital with like burns all over her body, basically saying, well, you die, I get all this money. Like, fuck off.
Yeah, but
it just
feels
so out of place as well. Like, I don't know. I found it so cringy. And
I guess I guess maybe what Rob Schmidt and John Esposito were trying to go for was maybe making more of a heightened reality kind of approach with the story, given like how it's a very, I mean, the topic of the right, the die debate is such a very serious topic. And I guess they wanted to take more of a satirical kind of very heightened reality approach to the story, where it's not really takes it too seriously and just has fun with the idea, kind of like what pro-life did. But I think with even though I kind of felt the same about pro-life, but I will give pro-life a bit more of a credit, because at least it took its story serious to an extent, even if it never quite cited which angle it was on that debate. And I don't think this episode, like you said, doesn't take itself too seriously. And I think it's by making it a more of a darkish comedy, it doesn't really kind of gel with the story, and it doesn't help that most of the comedy just kind of falls a bit flat. And also, like, I actually did enjoy Corbin Bernsen as the lawyer, even though he's pretty much like the typical cold asshole lawyer. And I thought at least on that level he was fun, and who's like just cares about the money and nothing
else. It would have worked better in a different
film
thing.
Although I got to say, the performance that didn't, and character that did not make a lick of sense to me throughout this whole episode,
I think it's going to be the same one that I'm thinking of.
It's the character of Trish, played by Robin Sidney, who works as like a nurse at the dentistry where the character of Cliff Addison, played by Martin Donovan, is. And we find out that he had an affair with her. But the thing is, I don't get her character. She's not remorseful about having an affair with a married man. And she's like just full on, basically the approaching character is like she's a massive nympho or something like that. And then when she finds out that if, you know, Abby dies, Cliff inherits all this money, she's like becomes almost like this kind of gold digger type character who becomes obsessed with him. And even when he's like working on someone in the dentist chair, she's like going and all that, like, you know, trying to get his attention and everything. It's like every action she has throughout this whole episode, she doesn't feel like a real person.
No, she really doesn't. And I was just sitting there going, what? I don't know, like, where this film sits on the female, like, females in general. But you've got one, and obviously, we say this every episode, but the spoilers. You know, the main female character, like, gets burnt all over her body, and literally her only motivation from then on is like a revenge plot. And then the other female character is like, she doesn't give a shit that she's A, banging a married man, B, that his wife is like burnt and is in like, you know, in hospital and da da da, and then all she sees is like dollar signs later and forces herself on him. It's like, I don't think you view females very well. It's very poor in that regard, I feel.
I guess I don't want to like accuse the film of being sexist or anything like that. I guess that's the comical view they're going for. I guess hence like why that the character of Trish is very so over the top as a character and doesn't make any sense. I guess it just felt flat. Like
it felt out of place as well.
Mm.
It really, really did.
Although I will give sort of a credit to Julia Benson, who plays the wife Abby. Like at least, like I guess if there's any character you would least root for, or at least by the end of the episode, it is her character, because she's the one who's was like fucked over by her husband, and then of course you know that gives good reason why. You know, she would want to seek revenge. And I will give the episode credit. I did like the fact that anytime that she basically dies on the, like in the hospital bed, like her ghost goes after Cliff or anyone he is associated with. But then when she gets brought back to life, her ghost goes back in. And so now Cliff's now in the conundrum. It's like, oh, I want to respect her wishes that, you know, she wants to die, but then when you realize it's like, oh, my wife's trying to kill me, my ghost wife, it's like, oh, I want to keep her alive as much as possible so I don't get killed by her.
Yeah.
So I think that's a fun idea.
It's very poor in a way. It's like, because this character is like so adamant with one decision, then changes it so drastically.
Yeah. I guess the writers was trying to, maybe it's like, show both those sides of the debate in that quick kind of exchange, but it just doesn't really work. I think the idea itself about
like it is clever in that regard, but I think probably it could have been handled better.
Yeah exactly. Yeah, but I mean it's like I think overall I like I said, it is an easy watch of an episode, and I for most part I did still enjoy it. But it doesn't quite as hold up as it did when I first saw it. And I think it kind of, like I said, suffers kind of similar problems that I had with pro-life, that it never really sort of takes a side in the debate and takes more of a sort of an apolitical view of it. Not to say that's not a bad thing, because I do appreciate it when they kind of show both sides of it and then let the audience kind of decide from there. But I feel like it doesn't even really do that enough to kind of leave you sort of thinking about it and debating about it once it's over. And, you know, some aspects are fun. Like some of the gore is pretty solid. I don't know how accurate it is when it comes to the burn ward in hospitals.
Yeah, I don't know. So that seemed really, really weird to me. And also, I don't know if this is a real thing, like at all, but they're like, unless she has a full body transplant, she'll die, but she won't be the same even when she has that. And I'm like, what? Is this a thing? Like, is that how you deal with burns? I mean I know nothing about it, but the way they talked, it just seemed really just not I don't know.
Yeah, I mean I've heard of like, you know, with certain burn victims, there's like skin grafts and stuff like that. But I have never heard anything about like full body skin transplants or anything.
Yeah,
I don't
quite know, because they just said full body transplant because she's rejecting the grafts or something, I think.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, it just seemed weird to me. And then, of course, like the climax of the film is where Cliff is like, Trish has lots of skin and she's a bit of a bitch. I'm gonna get that skin. Which he does. He skins her. And Abby still dies before he can do that. And obviously his fate is to deal with the ghost of Abby. But
I did like the ending though, like how it's basically
his comeuppance, I suppose. But he murdered Trish and gets nothing happens really. I suppose in a way, like no one ends up knowing, but Abby will kill him, so whatever.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious Abby is going to kill him after...
He knew what his fate was, basically.
Yeah, pretty much, and he just basically, like, just gave up. It's like, oh, well, if I'm going to die, I get what's coming to me. I liked at least the episode ended on that note. And also, like, when we were talking about with Valerie on the stairs, there's a lot of nudity in this episode. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But there's a lot of nudity. You'd like go, whoa.
It's very striking, though, in how similar like the sex scenes are between the two films.
Mm.
Because in Valerie, it's between like what we think might be a ghost, but we don't really know what Valerie is at this point. And when she has sex with the main character. But then in this one, it's Cliff in the bath, and then he just sees his wife, what she looks like before the accident, naked and going to have sex with him. Yes. And then obviously stuff happens at the end of that scene.
Maybe that's why they sort of put these two episodes
together. I know, it's very weird how they just felt so similar. So very similar.
Yeah, I know, it's just... Oh, yeah. It's very weird. Before we even talked about it tonight, before we recorded this episode, even I'm just sitting there, it's like, wow, there's actually little similarities between these two episodes. And, of course, what we just talked about is one of the big reasons why that is.
Yeah, it's very, very bizarre, I have to say. I know it's a weird thing to talk about, but it's just weird that how they're just that, like, so similar.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what would you rate this one, and what are your closing thoughts on Right to Die?
I would say it's about a solid 3, which is a bit of a step down from when I previously rated it, which was, like, 4 out of 5. So it's about a 3 now. I think overall it is a decent episode. I had fun with it, and there are a lot of aspects about it that I quite enjoyed. And of course, you know, it's got Corbin Burnson, so, you know, he's always fun to watch when he's on screen. And it has some pretty cool ideas sprinkled throughout. But at the same time, though, I guess it feels a bit toothless as well in terms of how it sort of tackles the right to die debate. And I think I can definitely see they were going for, like, this sort of heightened, sort of very dark comedic satire with the story. But I don't think it really sort of quite nails that approach for it to be truly memorable. I mean, not as much as something like Homecoming did, like where it sort of just completely nailed that approach. You can see them, they're trying to do a similar thing here, but it doesn't quite nail it. Like, overall, it's a fun, decent episode, but it's not quite as good as it could have been. So about a 3 out of 5 for me.
Mm. My rating for this one is 2.5 out of 5. So our ratings for each film are like opposite, like reversed, I guess. it was a big mixed bag. And I don't know, it just, like I said, it just did not quite vibe with me. And I just think, like, if you're going to have a subject like this, you just can't take this weird middle approach, like do one thing or the other. Because I think that would be more impactful. But, you know, seeing as they went sort of in the middle, like, okay, sure. But I don't know. I just don't think the tone most of the time quite worked for what it was. And I don't know if that weird humor really worked either. So, yeah, 2.5 from me.
Indeed. And that's the wrap on this episode of Podcasters of Horror.
Yes, two episodes that are a massive mixed bag for us.
Yeah, definitely. I think we, like I said, we kind of gave similar ratings to both these episodes, but slightly one opposite. So yeah, I think, yeah, these were kind of the more, I guess, two of the more mixed bag episodes of the whole run run of the show for us overall.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely been worse episodes, but there's definitely been much better episodes.
Indeed. But I guess that'll be a a wrap on this episode.
Yes.
And as always, these are always fun to talk about, Marcy. And Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
Okay. Well, people can find us online. You can find us, as always, at supermarcy.com. You can follow my Twitter account at twitter.com/supermarcy. You can follow the Super Network on Twitter at twitter.com/sm_supernetwork. You can join the Super Network Facebook page at facebook.com/thesupernetwork, or you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/thesupernetworkgroup. You can email us at thesupernetworksm@gmail. You can subscribe to us at Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork for lots of awesome exclusives and early access to podcasts. You can look up Super Marcy on Redbubble for designs of our podcasts. You can subscribe to us via YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Castbox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addicts, Pocket Casts, Deezer, and Listen Notes. And of course, you can follow us on our Instagram, which is, I believe, the.super.network, and on TikTok we are the Super Network, and I think that just about covers all of that. What about for you?
Well, if people want to find me personally, they can find me on my Twitter page at twitter.com/bjamine, or follow my writings on my personal writers page at facebook.com/terribleaussie, and of course find all of our mine and yours and both of our writings at over at supermarcy.com. I've got a couple of things that by the time this episode airs should already be up online, including my latest bad movie tweet-a-thon, which was on the filmer Kangaroo Jack. And also you can listen to my audio review of the modern day adaptation of Charles Dickens's novel Oliver Twist with the British crime drama twist. And of course, it's almost here, people. My official top 10 list of 2020 is coming. Hopefully, by the time we record one of our next episodes, it should be already online. So keep a lookout for that.
And there we go. That is a wrap. Join us next time on Podcasters of Horror, where we will talk episodes 10 and 11, We All Scream for Ice Cream from director Tom Holland, and The Black Cat from director Stuart Gordon.
I am excited for the talk about those two episodes.
Mm-hmm. So until next time, I've been Super, Beta's been terrible. Bye, everyone.
No. See everybody. Bye.
Bye.